Welcome everyone to this interview where I'm super excited to be talking with Jason Prowl. And we're going to be exploring the impact of trauma on our belief systems and how we can become overly rigid and stuck in certain ways of seeing ourselves and the world, which can hugely limit us. And there's also great potential in being liberated from those. To give you a bit of Jason's background, Jason Prowl is a health educator, practitioner, author, speaker, and filmmaker. In 2018, his independent research and experience led him to create the Human Longevity Project, a 9-part film series that uncovers the true nature of chronic disease in our modern world. He's recently published his first book entitled Beyond Longevity. So, Jason, welcome back. It's always a pleasure to have you on our events.
Oh, thanks for having me.
All right. So why don't we start with a fairly broad frame of just laying some kind of foundations from your perspective in terms of trauma means different things to different people. So I'm curious in your perspective and in your lens, when you talk of trauma, how do you contextualize that? Like what do you see that as?
Yeah, this is a tough one, right? Because especially when I'm working with a client and this topic or idea of trauma comes up, there's usually people that fall into two camps. One is, yes, I've experienced trauma, right? Somebody has sexually, physically, emotionally abused me to such a degree that I can classify that as trauma. Or maybe even I've been in a serious car accident and I had some head trauma or whatever, but there's this idea that something big impacted me to such a degree that I couldn't overcome it in that time, and it has lasting impacts on who I am. And then there's the other camp, which is like, no, I haven't experienced any trauma. You know, I had a great life. You know, my parents loved me. They loved each other. I grew up in a totally normal household. Like, what's wrong with me? Because I didn't experience any trauma, right? And I want to point to the idea that both of those are correct, right? Like, yes and yes, that's true. And there's this wide spectrum of what it even means to think about trauma, right? And so again, trauma, when we have these big, huge, emotional, significant events that happen in our life, that's, we can identify with that. We understand that. We cognitively grasp that. But then there's this whole other aspect to our life that we don't even remember, right? Primarily before the age of 4, let's say, right? Which is weird because my son is almost, he's just about to turn 3. And I thought about this the other day. I'm like, he's not going to remember anything so far, right? Like, that's a really weird idea.
That's not an excuse to not do fun stuff.
right, exactly. But we have this sort of, we don't have this conscious memory of most of our life before 4 years old. We might remember hints and things, and smells might trigger it, right? Which is an interesting aspect of the limbic system. But there's certain aspects that we don't even remember. And so in those early phases of development, we have such a raw system. We have such an underdeveloped system. And what I mean by that is our nervous system, our cognitive processes, our ability to consciously grasp the world around us just isn't online yet. It's not there. So we are this open system of just experiencing things, right? Where we're experiencing the energies all around us, in our parents and our caregivers and our brothers and sisters and everything that's going on, right? The news media and the recessions and all the things that are happening in our world. And we're these little tiny beings just absorbing it all, not knowing what the heck any of it is, except for just feeling it, right? And even the feelings, we don't even fully understand what those are. So we can't consciously grasp. You know, I have books that I read to my son, and we're trying to teach emotional sort of consciousness, emotional intelligence, right? What does it mean to be angry and sad and lonely and all these things? Or we have to know these things. We have to learn these things. And so really we're just these feeling beings. Well, when our nervous system is so underdeveloped, then it doesn't take much to overwhelm it, right? So this is the thing. But so can we classify that as trauma? If we're a young being and we experience something that's not even really that big of a deal, but the little nervous system can't make sense of it and handle it, and, you know, cries and tries to process the emotion but can't quite process it all, we can classify that as kind of a trauma, right? It's an overwhelming experience that we're unable to process, either on our own or perhaps with a caregiver assisting us. We haven't been able to fully process. So that's what I would consider maybe trauma on the spectrum. But then we have these whole other categories of things that I think play a so much bigger of a role in our adult lives than we even recognize. And a lot of times what I'm talking about is it plays a role in this aspect that becomes the shadow of us. In other words, the things that we don't even see, perhaps other people see, and eventually we might get reflected about that. But this is the conditioned reality that we find ourselves in, right? And this is conditioned beliefs, conditioned thoughts, conditioned behaviors. And what's even more fascinating, all of those lead to a conditioned biology, right? So we have the big, huge traumas that we remember. There's these little tiny things that happen before we have a conscious memory that we can classify as traumas. Then we have these beliefs and ideas that get inculcated in us as children, right? If we grew up in a low-income household, that we're always financially strapped and living one meal to the next, and you know, we might have assistance come in from outside, whatever that might look like, we're going to have certain beliefs about money, that it's hard to come by, that there's not enough of it, that there's certain people that try to take it and they hoard it. They have all these ideas, right? So these ideas, beliefs, thoughts start to become reality for us as we get older. And that, in my opinion, becomes a very, very tricky place, because we don't even recognize necessarily what's ours and what we've taken on from our environment, from everything around us.
Yeah, in a sense, what I'm really hearing and what you're saying is that it's not the actual things that happen, it's the things we learn from the things that happen.
And that's right.
The habits, the patterns, the beliefs that then, in a sense, are recreating a lot of those experiences, because we normalize to something that may not actually be normal.
Yeah, and essentially, as a 42-year-old now, I could be basically living like a 5-year-old. In other words, I'm living in the past, probably mostly, to be honest. You know, I'm still unwinding so much of who I think I am. And it's sort of this rediscovering of who I am, what I really believe, right? And this is where it really benefits to become malleable. It behooves us to kind of just hold everything so lightly. And this is a practice. This is definitely something that we might need to sort of focus on and put into practice every day, is holding things lightly, my beliefs, my thoughts, my ideas, right? We talk about science. I mean, science is laughable, right? We think that there's a hard set of facts, and yet they keep changing, right? And if you look back 50 years ago, the science was totally different. 100 years before that, it was totally different. And we might come back around to an idea that was popular 150 years ago, right? So this is where we get locked into what reality is. And the truth is that it's a lot more squishy than I think we realize. And so the things that I think about myself, right, the sort of internal working model that we might call it in sort of psychology terms, this idea of how my world is structured, who I am in this world, who I am in my family, right? We play these roles out, right? And we have family constellations that help sort of unwind those entanglements between our parents and our brothers and our whoever, children or whoever it might be. So we condition ourselves into a reality that feels very fixed, that feels very structured, that feels very firm and solid. And there's a reason for that, right? We are highly adaptable beings. And so when we come into this world, as I mentioned, we're open systems. We are totally open. And so because of that, excuse me, we then model ourselves to the environment based on actually our constitution, our essence, who we truly are, and our gifts. So we come in with gifts, right? That's the cool part, is that, and we don't need to do anything or be anything to express those gifts. They're inherently there. So because those gifts are inherently there, and because of our environment, we start to express in a certain way, right? So just like an apple tree, when it's planted in the right soil and in good conditions, with the right light coming and all that, and planted in the right season, it's gonna grow based on its condition. But if it's growing up against a brick wall and there's shade over here, then it's going to start to grow in a unique way to try to express its gifts because of its environment. So we do the same thing, and we're highly, highly adaptable. And so that means that when we find something that works, given our certain circumstances that we find ourselves in, we tend to stick with it, right? Because it worked at one period of our life, either in a very brief, significant moment, or more likely, a repetitive condition that we find ourselves in. And again, generally what I'm speaking about is social constructs that we start to condition ourselves into a person, into an ego, into a personality, right? And that's who we become. And so we carry this with us as we leave that environment. And now we think this is who I am. And that's where it gets confusing.
And of course, part of what's interesting about that is that we normalize to things being a certain way until something that happens that shakes that or unsettles that, right? And it's interesting. Something that's been really a life for me over the last couple of weeks is that our middle daughter, who is just turned 9, in the class that she's in at school, and it's not something that's happening to her directly, but there's been some quite, what I would consider quite serious issues of bullying in the class. And I hadn't thought about it for like 30 years, but a lot of serious experiences of being bullied as a child. And so hearing about these things in the classroom and then hearing about how, in my opinion, the school not dealing with it the way that they should, it's like the kind of the rage and the injustice and all of these emotions kind of arising. And what was interesting to me was that there are parts of my personality very heavily shaped by those experiences. And to go back to what you were saying, in some ways, in quite positive ways, like being someone that won't stand for people not being treated in kind and respectful ways and wanting to kind of be a champion of people that perhaps are not otherwise being supported. But it shocked me how much activation that there was. And it's often that, right, that it triggers and things like that that show us how these things have been wired and set up that otherwise we may not see.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so what happens with all that too, and we're speaking about kind of social constructs and how we are, who we become in that way. What's fascinating is it translates to our biology, right? So all of the things that were you being bullied and the thoughts, ideas, beliefs, and behaviors that you then adapted to in that situation, not just that one situation, but for a course of perhaps many, many years, your biology will respond in kind. Right. So this is what's wild. So this is why trauma as a sort of big broad category that we're speaking about it here is so important when it comes to chronic ailments, chronic diseases, skin conditions, autoimmune conditions, cancers, you know, digestive issues, depression, anxiety, you know, a whole spectrum of things. It's playing a role. And when we resolve these things, when we unwind them and when we recondition the mind, the beliefs, the behaviors, the biology starts to recondition too. So all of these sort of unconscious nervous system components start to do their own thing. They start to behave in a way that's healthy, that is conducive to life itself. And so getting caught in that, and we'll just loosely call it a stress response, that can lead to a variety of ailments in the body. So many that it's hard to even fathom, right? I mean, pain, you name it, like everything can go back to these things. And again, I want to stress that it's not just these sort of capital T big event traumas, it is conditioning. So the way that we think about ourselves, the way that we believe, who we believe we are in this world, that is setting up circumstances in our body. What's even more fascinating about this whole sort of mind-body connection is that we can have a triggering event, let's say Lyme disease or mold toxicity, right? We find ourselves in a moldy building and we get mold toxic with, you know, aspergillus and black mold. And then we have these mycotoxins within us, and that's causing all kinds of disarray, biologically speaking. And many people suffer from this. That will cause all kinds of dysfunction and sort of this chaos, metabolic chaos in the body. It can also lead to sort of this limbic system injury. In other words, it can be the trauma itself to our nervous system. So our nervous system responds as something dangerous is happening. So what happens? Our limbic system primarily, but the brain is very complex. So I don't want to just dumb it down to that. But the emotional aspects, the attention aspects, which are primarily related to the limbic system, this hyper awareness, this emotional aspect, this starts to get on high alert, and it flips into this sort of mode that's hyper attentive. And you start to notice that you get caught in these patterns, right? So now we have mold toxicity or a heavy metal toxicity or some kind of physical ailment that can actually trigger a mental emotional trauma loop on the nervous system level that gets us stuck in these mental, emotional, and behavioral patterns, right? And one behavioral pattern that many find themselves in if they have chronic ailments is that they will constantly check the symptoms. So if you've got pain, right, like you in your elbow, you're constantly checking your elbow, right? Or if you've got this skin rash, you're constantly, every so often, you're all of your behaviors. How did that affect my skin rash? How did that affect my skin rash, right? We have these very interesting behavioral patterns. And so now we get caught in these very interesting loops of behavior, thought, belief, emotion, and physicality. And it just, it's all wrapped up into one. And so the trick is with actually all of this stuff, the big capital T traumas, these conditionings, is to become aware of the process first, right? So it's becoming aware of these things. First of what I'm talking about, right? Just this idea of becoming aware of it is interesting in and of itself. And then becoming aware of what are the thoughts that I'm having? What are the beliefs? What are the ideas? What are the emotions that are tied to this? And what are the behaviors? And from that perspective, I can start to unwind the biology. So this is what's really fascinating with trauma is that we have the conscious aspect, which I'm speaking of. We have the subconscious or unconscious aspect that can be addressed. And we have the physical. So we can, they really are all interrelated, and we can heal emotional trauma through the physical form and vice versa, right? So it's all so interconnected, but we need to interrupt the pattern of disharmony that's going on between the mind, the body, the emotions, and the behaviors.
And also what came to my mind, Jason, as you're speaking, is that in that kind of pattern lock, as you call it, or that kind of rigidity in a sense that happens, it strikes me that part of what we're trying to do is we're trying to recreate a lost feeling of safety by things being the same, right? So it's like, if there's a consistency and a continuity in my beliefs and my behaviors and my habits, then that gives me a sense of reassurance that this is who I am and this is how the world is. And of course, one of the impacts of trauma is that we feel less safe in our within our core. So the more mm-hmm. we're trying to find those ways to build that safety, but that almost becomes an additional glue holding all this together, right?
Yeah, I mean, fundamentally, it's all based around safety. That is the fundamental need as infants and really as adults too. I mean, we need safety. We need connection. Right, those are two fundamental needs. This recognition of who I am, right? This belief. So there's a lot of things that we're needing. These are core needs, right? Like safety is a core need. And so if safety is a core need, then we're going to do whatever we can to find it, right? And that becomes part of our adaptability. And that's what we do, right? When you got bullied, you developed thoughts, behaviors, and emotions and biology to find safety, right? And safety in that messed up environment. Right, so that's a chaotic environment that you had to adapt to find some version of safety, and safety may look like completely stop feeling things, right? For some people, because they felt so much pain and disconnection, they just stopped feeling, and that was safe. That was safer than feeling pain and agony and disconnection, right? This feeling of again, anything that safety can provide. We're going to find ways to do that, right? So that's a core aspect. And same thing with connection. We're going to find sort of ways to try to get connection however we can. You see this a lot in infants, right? It's really, really easy in infants. They will do anything they can to get that connection. They will try all kinds of different behavioral patterns to see if they can find that connection. And so we do that same thing as adults. And that safety looks like different things. And I think you hit a very, very good point that oftentimes it is the repetitive nature. In other words, it's the thing that I know how to do becomes super safe, even if that thing is harmful, right? That's what's wild, is that we can do all kinds of behavioral things that are not good for us, but they feel safe. We're getting some core need met. And so to unwind that can be challenging. In other words, we sometimes go into, it feels unsafe. To engage a new pattern. There's something about it that just feels unsafe. And that's why oftentimes it's helpful to have support, right? To have somebody, a coach, a therapist of some kind, to sort of help us navigate those arenas, not just from a talking perspective, but from an embodied perspective, they can actually provide support in those ways. But that's what is that's the resistance that we find ourselves in, to engaging any new behavior, any new thought pattern, right? This is sometimes work at first, just like going to the gym. If you don't go to the gym, just getting to the gym is the hardest part, right? Once you're there, it might be okay, but like driving yourself to the gym can be the hardest part. So engaging these new patterns is the difficult part, but fortunately we are so adaptable, right? We have this like concept of neuroplasticity. We can regrow, retrain these new neural pathways away from this sort of defunct behavior, thoughts, and emotions that once served us really well, but now no longer do. And so it takes a little bit of retraining. And the key to that is consistency. The key is repetitive aspect of this new cycle, new behavior, new thought, new pattern. So creating these new patterns, there is resistance at first because we're pattern locked, right? We get into this groove of who we are and our thoughts. And a lot of these thoughts that we have are very, let's just say, not conscious. You know, it can take awareness to bring consciousness, to bring attention to these thoughts that we're having, right? So this is the training sometimes, is just to start to recognize, as I'm doing this behavior that I know I want to stop, let's say, okay, what are the thoughts and what are the feelings that are happening as I am about to engage the behavior? And sometimes it's helpful not even to stop the behavior. Like, it's okay. Like, you're going to eat food and you know you're not hungry. It's an emotional eat, right? Masturbation is another very big example these days that people find themselves in a pattern that has to do with an emotional trauma or situation. So what are the thoughts and feelings that are coming up as I go eat that cake or as I eat that whole box of cookies? Without even trying to stop yourself or make yourself wrong for eating the cookies, just starting to recognize the thought patterns that are coming up. What are the beliefs? What are the emotions? What am I feeling in my body? So it's just bringing attention and awareness to some of these aspects because they are important. And so it's very difficult. I'm sure you say you can't, but it's very difficult to just stop the behavior. Stop smoking. Just stop it. We need to actually bring awareness to what's going on. When I pull out that cigarette, when I go for that coffee, that's just this addictive behavior, what am I thinking? What am I feeling? And as we do that, then we can actually consciously start to change these thoughts and feelings and focus on something else, right? So we can focus on a new thought. We can actually create a feeling in the body, right? If I go watch puppy videos, for example, right, I'm just going to bring this like cute, fluffy, kind of happy energy to me. In the moment, I can actually interrupt that previous pattern that is so locked in, right? So that's what's wild, is that these things are just automatically happening. And so it's going to take some conscious intervention in sort of the thoughts and the emotions once I recognize what those old thoughts and emotions are. So it's like identify the old thoughts and emotions, then find a way to engage a new thought, a new emotion in the moment of going to reach for that cookie, the cigarette, the coffee, whatever the case is that you're this pattern that you're wanting to break, you start to interrupt it. And over time, with enough repatterning, the old pattern will just fall away. You know, this quitting smoking and the quitting whatever behavior that is not conducive to your health will start to shift. And as you do that, your nervous system shifts, new neural patterns are created, your biology starts to shift. That's what's wild. I mean, some of the most significant physical ailments that you can ever imagine, you know, these like super complex cases that 12 functional medicine doctors, 3 naturopaths, 2 Ayurvedic professionals, none of them can solve. It's because it's like a limbic system injury. It's a nervous system pattern that has locked the biology into this way of being. And so it doesn't mean the herbs and the supplements and the lifestyle things are not working or not are bad. Those are good and they should be engaged with. And there may be a deeper layer, which is on the nervous system level and the brain level, that there's this pattern lock happening that's affecting the biology, keeping you stuck. And so unwinding that through conscious repatterning can be a huge key that unlocks the door.
Well, it's like you were saying a bit earlier that there are certain like needs, like safety that we have. And the strategies we have at the moment aren't necessarily the best strategies. Right. They're just the best we knew how to do at the time, but then just right. become locked in as the way that we do it. And so in what you're saying with that awareness and that working to repattern, part of it, I guess, is going, so what, not do I think I want or need, but what actually is the core need that I'm trying to meet? And is there a healthier and more skillful way of trying to meet that?
Absolutely. Yeah. And kind of, I'll give another example that's a little out of left field here. It doesn't necessarily pertain to trauma, but it's along the same lines. I go back to that money example. Some of these things we it carries into the health world too. We have these ideas about what reality is, because we were conditioned in that reality. In other words, we got this like small worldview of the thing, of what healing is, of what health is, of what my body is capable of how healing occurs, of what finance looks like and how money works and all that. There's energetics and beliefs, and we're living in this small reality because that's all we knew. And then to break out of that reality and open ourselves up to a new reality, that can literally change everything about how that reality is impacting us. So this idea of what healing looks like, many people have this idea that healing takes a long time, right? It's linear. So in other words, it goes boom, 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 and we get better slowly over time. And eventually it either goes away, or because of the condition I have, it doesn't go away. I can only minimize the thing, right? And so this is a conditioned belief. This is not the reality. I've seen things that have shaken my beliefs around health to such radical degrees that I had to just drop all of what I think I know. And to the point where I'm now a believer that anything is possible. In other words, I don't know where the limit is. And that's a cool reality, because that means there is no limit, right? But if I'm creating a self-imposed limitation on the condition that I have, what anxiety is, where it comes from, why it is the way it is, if I can ever get, I mean, you hear this a lot actually in AA, former alcoholics. They say, you know, once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. Wow, what a reality to put yourself in. Now, I'm not saying that's totally wrong. I think so much of what they do is fantastic in sort of the AA 12-step programs. And there's a self-imposed limitation, right? I'm an alcoholic. In other words, you're claiming this reality. That's, you got to be careful when you do that, right? So I, from what I've seen, we can overcome all of this stuff. We can overcome all of it. And a lot of this has to do with sort of breaking down the walls of our conditioning, of what we think is possible. So much of our conditioning comes from the news media, comes from the commercials on TV, comes from our schooling and our education system, comes from our parents, comes from everything around us. And so when we walk into new realities that can show us something different, then those walls start to crumble. And this is where the hope and the belief, and this is why a lot of the more religious and spiritual sort of practices and groups, they still play in that world of anything is possible, right? And so there's a lot there that can unfold. And I've seen this with a variety of techniques and methodologies, that things that I didn't think could happen happened, like remarkably fast, like almost instantaneously go away. And it's to the point where it's hard to explain, you know? But this comes back down to, again, the reality, the conditioning, and who we think we are, and what reality really is.
Yeah, and I guess also that even though there may well be limits somewhere, we don't know where the limits are until we test them, right? And of course, part of the challenge is that it's the analogy that's in my mind, it's like the goldfish in the goldfish bowl that get so used to swimming around, then one day they get put in a bigger bowl, but they don't realize they're in a bigger bowl because they're still swimming in the same circles. And it's like if what determines the limits of our capacity is just our trauma, that's an enormous limitation that, as you say, is almost probably entirely not true.
Yeah, exactly. And this is where the exercise of just examining your beliefs, right? So this is a little bit challenging. It's kind of stepping outside of yourself, outside of your little self, the conditioned self that you've become, and just start looking at your beliefs, looking at your thought patterns, and just questioning those. Why is it that I believe this thing? It may be right. No question, it may be right, but why is it that I actually believe it? Where did that belief come from? Where did it get established, right? So that's a really good exercise. Whatever struggles you're dealing with in relationships, in your physical health, with money, with your purpose, with God, like it's all really interesting to start looking at, why is it that I believe this thing that I believe? Do I actually believe it, or have I just been going with the flow because it's easy, right? And start to sort of massage those thoughts and ideas and beliefs. And when you do that, I think you start, for me anyway, I really started to recognize how ignorant I am, right? And so I think there's a sort of a philosophy in sort of the yogic culture that if we identify with our intelligence, with how much we know, then we become what we know, which is about like this much. No matter how smart you are, you can know everything and it's this much. Whereas if you start to identify with your ignorance, which is basically limitless, right? All the stuff that we don't know, then it actually allows us to expand into everything, into the unknown. So this is, I think, for me, a very, very good exercise for so many of us, start to break down those walls of what we think we know. And most of the stuff we think we know, whether it's mathematics or physics or biology, it's really been fed to us, and we don't, how do we know what we really know? And so we get into this epistemological sort of side of things, but the exercise of that helps soften this rigid aspect of who we are. And what I found in my health practice is that it's the rigidity that keeps us stuck. We are too rigid. We are too fundamentally tied to our beliefs that keep us stuck in the reality that we're in. And we may not know the answers, but we may not know how to get out of the situation that we're in. But starting to soften the edges and let go of some of those things that keep us locked into these ideas, these thoughts, these behaviors, and these emotions, that will allow room for new things to come in, for answers to actually unfold, both within us and outside of us. We start to have these solutions appear because we're not holding on to this reality so tightly. And again, I want to reflect back to what something you said earlier. The reason that we're holding this reality so tightly is generally a need for safety, to feel safe, to feel connected, to feel stable on some level, right? And so it takes courage to sort of soften those boundaries. It takes curiosity. But that's to me the way out, right? It's not actually this fighting courage. It's more of just this curious, this loving curiosity of who am I? What do I believe? Where did this come from? You know, what does it mean? How is it showing up in my life, right? And again, for me, I'm going through a sort of money thing for me right now. It's like I'm examining all of these things. Like, what is it about? Like, what are my thoughts and energies and feelings about finance and money, and how does that impact my life? And how's it showing up? How does it keep me in this sort of reality that I am in, because I want to grow beyond that, right? So it takes a lot of work sometimes to examine these things, but as we do, I find that everything starts to get easier. The answers start to come in because we're giving space to this idea that we think we know what reality is.
Yeah, it also is, in a sense, the confirmation bias as well, isn't there? That what happens is that we have a set of beliefs, and then we act from those beliefs. And so the evidence that comes back to us confirms those beliefs, which then makes those beliefs stronger. And sometimes we've really got to gather the new evidence that is strongly enough challenges the old belief to be able to get free from it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I find this a lot with doctors in my space. So part of what I do is, you know, intermingle with doctors and to some degree help doctors trained in the traditional model find their way into the more integrative space. And so that's a lot of deconditioning that needs to happen. There was, you know, 12 years of school that they went through to create this model for how they see, I wouldn't even say health, because they don't get taught health. They get taught disease. Mm-hmm. So that's a perfect example of what I'm talking about, is that their mindset is all about disease. How do I manage disease? How do I diagnose disease? How do I identify it? What do I work with it? They're not taught what health is, where it comes from, how to facilitate it, right? How to encourage it. So that's a totally different, it's not that they can't learn it. And it's not that they fundamentally don't even know. It's just they've been conditioned to this reality over here. So we've got to open the doors of perception a little bit. And the easiest way to do that is through direct experience, right? So Alex, I know you work with people one-on-one. That space right there is a very sacred space for many people, because they can go through an experience that shows them something new. And a lot of times, if you're the therapist, that looks like being the ideal parent that they didn't have, right? Showing up in a way that I call a missed experience. So you're giving them a missed experience of the proper attunement, the proper care, right? The proper mirroring of who they are. And that itself can unfold the reality in them in the session space, where literally a new reality emerges, a new idea about who they are starts to form, a new idea about a loving caregiver, parent type figure, and what they can bring to the table, right? Like that's different reality. So many of us grew up with parents who really did their best, but weren't able to give us what we needed. And so we conditioned to this idea that that's all the world can give us, right? And so, because those parental figures, those caregivers are so foundational in who we are, that then gets projected on our people at work, on God, on, you know, the support network around us, on the government, on all these things, right? And so again, we're projecting that reality, which means we're locking it in. We're creating that reality, right? So this is what's wild about this stuff, is that there's this holographic nature about who I am, what I think, what I believe about the world, and I project that out to confirm what I think I know, and sure enough, I get it right back. And in other words, I never get the support I need. Every time I ask for support, you know, it never shows up, or it shows up and then it fails me. They never do the job right, right? That is a confirmation bias based on our own energetics, based on our beliefs, our energetics of who we are will create that reality. So that's what's wild, is that we're constantly getting confirmation. And so we can work these unconscious processes, and that's beautiful, especially in a session space when you have the support of another to help you get into these aspects of ourselves to process unconscious things. We can also bring conscious awareness to the things that we're doing and thinking and believing. So we have unconscious processing, we've got conscious repatterning, right? And then we've got sort of the behavioral aspect of things, where we can sort of jimmy rig it and force it through behavior changes, right? That's the brute force way, but it can be done too. And as you engage in new behaviors, this is what you find when people move to a new city or they move to a new country, is that their entire environment changes, their behaviors change, and they find that they're a different person in a way. It's because their entire reality shifted based on their behavior and their environment. So the external world has a place in this too.
And I feel like also there's a real message of hope in what you're saying, because if we've got a bunch of beliefs about the world being a certain way, we can't change, we can impact the world, but we may not be able to change all of those things in the world. But if what actually needs to change is our beliefs, that's a shitload easier, right, to do something about. And so there's something that's actually very empowering, I think, in the message that you're giving.
That's right. And it goes back to the Matrix, as most things do. There's a little boy who's bending a spoon with his mind, right? And Neo goes, well, how are you bending that, right? And he's like, well, the trick is that there is no spoon, right? In other words, the reality that we think we're seeing, drop that. There is no reality. The only reality we actually know is our nervous system. That's the only thing we experience, is our own nervous system, right? And it's picking up sensations from the environment, but we only experience our nervous system. So we shift ourselves, and reality will bend to us. That's what's so cool. And there is a message of hope, which is that there's so much chaos in the world. God, I spent so many of my years in my life trying to change that world. Honestly, like, I thought I had this arrogance and this idea that I'm just going to go do what I can to change that world out there. And I didn't have the hubris to think that I could change all of it, but I was going to change it myself. And then in that process, what I recognized, oh, I see. The world is the way it is because we are who we are. So the way through that is to change me, and reality literally starts to bend to me. That's, again, going for me right now, I'm focusing on money. I change myself, my beliefs, my thoughts, my ideas around money, my energetics around money, and the money world starts to shift around me. That's a powerful reality. That's insane. And that opens the doors for, again, sticking with the money aspect, for money to come in out of nowhere. It doesn't mean I have to work harder. It doesn't mean I have to work smarter. It doesn't mean I have to do new things in business and get more efficient. Yeah, that's good too. But literally it can come out of nowhere, and it does. And I've seen it so many times. And this is how reality works. It happens with our health too. We change ourselves and literally everything shifts around us. Relationships, big, big one, which again, relate, and all of this impacts health, right? So lest we forget, if my finances start to improve, and I feel more stability in my financial environment, in my work environment, my nervous system starts to calm. My things heal. I get better sleep, right? I fix my relationships. My nervous system starts to feel good, fuzzy. I get connection, right? The dopamine, the oxytocin, all the beautiful neurochemicals that flood my system with bliss and health starts to change my physical health. So it's all so interrelated, right? And so as I shift myself in these various domains, now the feedback is unbelievable. Like, it's all so connected, and that's where the power is. Like, that's the beauty, right? Like, the other things, trying to change your relationship from the position of the other person is pretty tough. Trying to make them be different is hard, right? When we change ourselves, they show up differently. How? Because they feel us. They feel there's a change that gives them more safety, right? So this is really, I mean, this is the powerful aspect of the trauma work, is that as we process these things that are stuck in our system, as we re-engage and repattern our thoughts, ideas, beliefs, and emotions, and we change our behaviors, the entire world changes. Everything changes around us, and it gets easier and it gets more fun. And then when things get easier and they get more fun, then you show up differently. then you can help others in a way that you've never helped before, even though you might be assisting so many people. Now you can 10x that. Right? Like, that's the impact that we can have. And that's why it's so important to do this work. It is the most important work that we can do, is this sort of, again, loosely defined as trauma, is to re-engage with ourselves, this fractured version of ourselves, right? You know, we talk about the inner child a lot in sort of the trauma work. And I had someone say this to me, and it's totally true. We don't have an inner child. We've got an inner orphanage, right? We've got so many wounded children within us. And as we sort of process these things, and those little children grow up and they become integrated into one adult person, that is where our power comes from. That's where our gifts come from. Now we can show up in the world like we were meant to. That is our purpose, right? So people are looking for a purpose. The purpose comes through as you process these things. The happiness, the joy comes through naturally as you process these things. Everything starts to happen. We unfold as we process these things and we become integrated within ourselves.
And then, of course, in that, we get a confirmation bias, but in a positive way, right? That Absolutely. We start to then gather those, kind of to create our world around us in a way that mirrors those new beliefs.
And that is so big, right? Because so much of what we were caught in, most of us, is the opposite of that, right? Where it was our caregivers, our teachers, our peer group showing us limitations to the world, right? That's challenging, right? And so that's that confirmation bias that keeps us stuck. Now, when we get the opposite and we become the light for others, showing them that anything is possible, that they have the power within themselves to do it. Here's the path. Check this out. You know, bringing awareness to all the aspects that can help them on their path, on their journey. Then we just start walking each other home. You know, like that's really what it is. And it gets to be this joy where it stops being so hard day in and day out. Sure, there's struggles and there's pains and there's sufferings all throughout life, no question. But on the whole, it starts to just get easier. And we can walk through this life with a lot more ease, a lot more grace. And it sounds weird for you know, if I were to tell this to my old self when I was suffering with all kinds of health conditions and pains, it might sound like a warm and fuzzy message, but I don't think I would have believed it, you know? But that's the reality. And as we show up in that way, then it starts to turn on the lights for others. And through the progression, again, of this processing, there's a natural becoming. It's really wild. It's like you don't have to do anything. You don't have to try to be compassionate. You don't have to try to be of assistance and be of goodwill. You don't have to try to be joyful. It just starts to become who you are, because that is who we are naturally, right? We are that way. And it's just these things that are stuck, that are kind of fractured who we are. And we find ourselves kind of split, you know, split personality, which is exactly what happens. And I can prove it to you. If I were to piss you off enough, you become a different person, right? You dip into the six-year-old version of yourself. Or if I scare the shit out of you, right, then all of a sudden you become a four-year-old version of yourself, right? We become these different aspects of who we are. And so as we integrate those, as we become one with ourselves, then we start to show up as our true self. And then our beliefs come through, our thoughts, our ideas, our behaviors, right? Based on who we are. That's totally different. That is, then it comes more from the emergent quality, right? So instead of these patterned ways of being, which are all based on the past, right? Now we have our natural essence, our natural constitution that comes through in the moment, in the emergent aspect of the reality that we are facing. Moment by moment, we make choices. We have thoughts, we have ideas, we have beliefs, and it starts to just naturally unfold in a way that almost looks like you don't even know who you are from the former perspective, but rather you know who you are here. And that's wild. When you know your core, when you know your alignment, and you just know the truth, I don't need to convince you otherwise. I don't need to try to figure it out. I know it, right? That's what's wild. And that's who you are in the reality that you find yourself in moment by moment. And that's such an easier place to operate from once we can start to trust it, right? And that's the sort of the heart, and trusting that heart. And so it's not easy. And yet it is who we are inherently. So there's no struggle actually to do it. It's just getting there. That's kind of the challenge sometimes.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Jason, for people that want to find out more about you and your work, what's the best place to go and what some of what they can find, and also mention your new book as well?
Yeah, I've got a new book that released on December 27th called Beyond Longevity, a proven plan to heal faster, feel better, and thrive at any age. And so it's a lifestyle medicine book. It's about how do we walk through the world and in a healthy way, in an aligned way. And so there's a variety of topics that we cover in that book, but definitely trauma is a big piece that we talk about. You can also find me at Awakened Health Academy. This is where I have a lot of my library of content that people can dive into. There's a 7-day free trial that you can sign up for as well. So those are probably the two best places.
Fantastic. Jason, I always enjoy our conversations. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Alex.